Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
My Seven Chakras, episode 366.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you experience effortless healing, awakening, and abundance. In today's episode, we talk about some really powerful and important topics, including what role does Ayurveda play in healing, the true nature of self, the importance of cleansing, and so much more. But before that, I'd like to remind you that I have recently released a 24-page PDF outlining some of my favorite ways to raise my vibrations and feel better almost immediately. To get your free PDF, visit mysevenchakras.com/feel-better-now. That's mysevenchakras.com/feel-better-now. All right, so let's bring on our special guest for today, who happens to be our second-time guest, Acharya Shunya. So Acharya Shunya is a globally recognized spiritual leader and Vedic lineage holder who awakens health and consciousness through the Vedic sciences of Ayurveda, Vedanta, and Yoga. And she's a driving force behind Vedika Global, an online not-for-profit wisdom school and worldwide spiritual community, and the author of the best-selling book on the Vedic art of mind, body, and soul, well-being, and health, Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, and forthcoming second book with Sounds True to be released in 2020, Sovereign Self. So, Acharya, welcome once again. Are you ready to inspire?
I am ready to inspire, and thank you for inviting me back. I really enjoyed our conversation last time.
Great. I did as well. And so to begin our session today, what is your favorite or that one inspirational quote that is on your mind these days, and how are you sort of applying it in your life?
I've really been contemplating upon a four-word Sanskrit statement by a teacher of non-duality from India, Shankara. And he had said, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, which it really means is that everything I see is of a lower order of reality, and the seer in me is of a higher order of reality. And that is allowing me to be more within and give less importance to what's going on without me, if you know what I mean.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, right?
Yes.
Which means that what you see around you, that is illusory, that is transient, that is changing. But what is eternal is your true self, your eternal self. And that is something that you have to discover for yourself. And there are paths. There are things that you can do to help you and facilitate that process of discovering that sovereign self. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So, Acharya, what is Ayurveda? Because there are so many definitions, right? There are so many connotations. I grew up in India, so I have a certain view of Ayurveda. You studied Ayurveda and learned from the masters all your life. So what is your understanding or your definition of Ayurveda?
The description of Ayurveda in Ayurveda is, or in the scriptures of Ayurveda is, Ayusho Vedaha Ayurvedaha, which means the Veda. Veda means the knowledge of life. Ayush is Ayurveda. And so Ayurveda was a teaching from the ancient seers of India, which happily were men and women, known as rishis and rishikas. It was really a putting together of a lot of wisdom that connects us to life, to the source of life, which we may call prana or, soul or consciousness ultimately. And how does it play out in the different containers of life, which is the body, the senses, the mind, and even the soul, which is really an aspect of that super consciousness, a carrier of that universal consciousness. And so therefore, I love it that the ancient sages who gave us yoga, who gave us meditation, they also gave us Ayurveda. Today, more and more people call it holistic medicine, which is totally fine because it's way more holistic than any other medicine that I have encountered, at least, or at least it's compatible to a lot of holistic ancient traditions from the world. It's no way behind it. And we discussed some of that in our previous, discussion. But I would say that it's also spiritual medicine. It is spirit's medicine. That's why in India, sometimes we call it, it's God's own medicine. And in the ancient Vedas, AJ, we have these celestial healers known as the Ashwini Kumaras. These are these twin brothers who take care of all the medical needs of the gods. And they are said to be the first Ayurveda doctors. Apparently, they live even today in the heavens. So I love all these connections of Ayurveda with spirituality.
Got it. I didn't know about the Ashwini Kumaras, who were sort of the doctors for the gods, right?
Yeah.
Back in the days. And that's amazing to know that as I try to uncover more and more about the history as well as the stories that people have been passing down from generation to generation, which really add a depth into the whole practice of Ayurveda. So it's not just physical, it's just not just mental, but it's spiritual as well. So encapsulating the whole you, the whole body, right? So how did you discover Ayurveda?
Or rather, Ayurveda discovered me, shall we say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because as Lord Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you are really, really into something, whatever are those last thoughts in the last 20 seconds of you exiting your current body, you will get a body to probably meet that need or complete it, because we are aspects of the divine and we really get to have the story we want. That's something to think about. And so probably the story I wanted was to be surrounded by Ayurveda and its sister sciences of yoga and Vedanta. And I was born, therefore, in a traditional family, a lineage actually, of non-dual Vedic teachings from India, from a tiny holy city called Ayodhya, from Uttar Pradesh, the state in northern India. And my family, grandfather, great-grandfather, our ancestors have been involved in teaching and disseminating the wisdom sciences of, from the Vedas, which emanate, such as from the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita and the Ayurveda and yoga source texts. So I was born there. I was, it was not forced upon me, and I'm definitely the first, Acharya or master teacher who is in a female body. Up till now, it was a male lineage. There was some deliberation by my grandfather. He skipped a generation. He skipped my father, even though he's a worthy soul and has received a Padma Shri from India for whatever he achieved in culture and writing, which is the highest honors from the President of India. But my grandfather felt that probably his daughter would be the carrier of this knowledge. And clearly, I'm doing what I need to do every day. Mm. And so I guess that is how I got involved in it. And from a personal perspective, just so that our listeners don't think it's just something, it's like a crown I'm wearing or something, I actually benefited from Ayurveda. I myself have been diagnosed with an immunological condition. There have been times when I was not as serious about Ayurveda. I was not walking the walk. I was just talking the talk. You know, we all go through that period of spiritual maturity. I've had times when I've had to use crutches. I have people with my condition live in wheelchairs. But so I've been using Ayurveda and its sister sciences. They're helping me. And that's why there's all the more reason I want to spread the news, not just because it's in my family, it's something I'm familiar with. It's a personal mission now, you can say.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for sharing that. And I'm glad that you pointed out the difference between talking the talk and walking the talk. And I don't see anything wrong in talking the talk, but then these practices are so powerful. They're so useful. They're so therapeutic, right? So there's a point, I guess, where somebody talks the talk and then they realize, wait, why am I talking? Like, why, right? Because it's actually useful. So might as well just walk the talk and, you know, embrace all these beautiful practices that can really rejuvenate and heal and also connect us with our eternal self. Now, you spoke about non-dual, right? You were born into a family that sort of practices or propagates non-dual teaching. So what is non-dual? And then what is the counterpart to that? What's the other way of practicing if it's non-dual?
Non-duality means that we recognize. It's not like we see everything as one common blob okay. of reality. We do recognize there is duality, which means there's more than one. Duality mm-hmm. means more than one multiple is really what duality means multiplicity. And that everything is separate from each other and there is life through all this varied existence. And non-duality is an evolved vision. You cannot see it, but you can deduce that despite this multiplicity, there is something common. There is a common thread. And the non-dual teachings, which come in the later part of the Vedas, known as Vedanta or Upanishads, say that though there are separate bodies, minds, races, you know, body types, gender, ultimately all of this, just like different waves can collapse back into one ocean, different things made of clay come back to becoming clay at the end of everything. We all resolve back into a common consciousness known as Chaitanyam or Brahman in Sanskrit. But ultimately, Brahman means that which is infinite, that which is so big that it cannot be superseded. It's the ultimate bigness. And that dwells in us. So even though you and I and our listeners, we look like we're different people, but even if we evaluate the body and we think, oh yeah, you got a different body, I got a different body. But even that body is made up of common building blocks according to Ayurveda, Yoga, Vedanta, known as the five elements of Panch Mahabhutas. If we look at our separate minds, we can resolve our different angst and sorrow and joy into the common vibrations known as gunas, which is of agitation, of peacefulness, or of disturbance. And then if we look at the soul, we find that there is no sinner and there is no saint. Ultimately, it is the same common consciousness known as Brahman or Atman, which means the boundless one, expressing itself. And so when my lineage was connected more to non-duality, sometimes I love the question, like, how are they different? Sometimes there is a position taken in that non-duality means we don't accept there is a duality. But what we're saying is that at a transactional level, there is a duality. And that's why we need ethics or dharma and consideration and interaction with each other. And we have to have healthy boundaries too. We can't exactly walk into everybody's bedroom and sleep there saying, well, tonight I'll just sleep here in Las Vegas or in Hollywood because we're all one. We can't do that. But at the same time, we don't want to hurt another. We don't want to violate another because the reality is that what's invisible, it is adrishyam, it is invisible, but we are connected with one common cord. And that is why, and I'll close with that, we can't really have secrets. I can't really speak nice things to you and think bad thoughts about you because you will know deep down, you will know my intention because we are one. So at a vibrational level, which I know you love to talk about, and maybe you can elucidate on that, we are one. And that non-duality was very important for my teachers. And that's why my ancient lineage was open to people of all caste. We even had all gender people come as students. And then I became the first non-male gender. And probably in our past, we had some Rishikas. We just don't have the remembrance of it now. And it was, we were quite a progressive lineage because of non-duality.
Got it. Well, thanks a lot for sharing. So from what I understand, non-duality means that a person recognizes that at the eternal level, everything is one. We're all one. We're all part of this one consciousness. Yeah. But for the purpose of expression, we're living this duality-based existence. But at the same time, we have practices and we have principles and we have this know-how to navigate through the challenges or difficulties that might arise as a result of this temporary duality.
How beautiful, yeah.
Right? Ultimately, we are non-dual. And what I like about what you're sharing and about Vedanta, Ayurveda, and all these Indic practices or philosophies is that we have a lingo, we have a way to explain the universe, right? Like, I think Western science is now beginning to talk about the Big Bang, or maybe questioning what happened before the Big Bang and realizing that at the moment of, you know, precise moment when the Big Bang was happening, everything was like the top of a pinhead, right? So essentially everything was Brahman, and then it expanded and it shot out and it created the stars and the galaxies and the earth and our individual human beings, right? So I like that Ayurveda and yoga, it explains through very simple terms what might have been and what might come in the future as well. So thanks a lot for sharing that perspective. Along the same lines, how does Ayurveda address the topic of spirituality? How does it talk about, you know, us, so to speak?
Yeah, I fell in love with Ayurveda. And one of the reasons is that it doesn't oblige me to split myself into pieces and parts and take my soul to the pandit or the religious master, take my body to the vaidya or the doctor, you know, and take my mind to the psychiatrist. It allows me to bring all of this together. And that's why we have, ancient verses which say that, sharira, body, indriya, senses, sattva, which means the mind, and atma, which means the soul, all of these come together to form the beautiful you. And so from the get-go, it defines the human being as a composite entity, not just as a soul, because then it would become a religion. It does see the soul with the body, with the senses that tend to get naughty in the universe, you know, with the mind that tends to get disturbed or overexcited or, you know, delusory in the universe. And then how does this all play out is really, really fascinating. And, in a way, I can say that I have found personally, AJ, in my own teachings, in my wisdom school and through my online courses and through all the places where I travel and teach, and I have students who study with me for years on end, I have found that it is Ayurveda that allows me sometimes when the disease is rampant, it's all over the body, either it's a chronic condition and mind is involved in it, there's psychosomatic stuff going on, the person's life is in shambles and you don't know where to begin. It's right. Really hard to begin with the body because the mind doesn't obey. It's hard to instruct the mind because it doesn't want to follow instructions, because if it was so smart, it wouldn't have reached this dark place to begin with. At that time, I used the door of spirituality from Ayurveda. And Ayurveda says that I have to remind the person of who they are. And it's very reminiscent of teachings from Ayurveda's cousin texts like Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. And it says, you know, start reminding them of the truth of who they are. And no matter how deep and dark a place our mind has collapsed into, when we are told about the light that dwells in us no matter what, and that we are not sinners, and that we are self-healing entities, and it's never too late, I have found the light come back in my students and, you know, and in the eyes of the people who came to our clinics, etc. And I have had 360 degree, and if I could use a bigger number, reversal in such a short time, because now I don't have to work too hard on the person, because the soul awakens, remembers its connections with the stars and the moon and the sun, and remembers its godliness, which really means its unboundedness, its limitlessness. And what, you know, modern science is now talking about neuroplasticity. Modern science is now talking about mind over body, right? This is what starts happening. And Ayurveda talks about it, that how the soul can command the mind and the senses and the body to, you know, come into healing. And I am really humbled with it. And at the same time, I was sorrowful. I just want to add this before I ask your perspectives on this, that I found that the spiritual aspect of Ayurveda has been dumbed down, diluted, or not even taught. Because after we became colonized, and then Ayurveda was brought back by the, you know, the new young government of India, there was this desire to somehow match the Western paradigm and the Western model of medicine, which is beautiful in its own space, because I would use it in a heartbeat if I needed to. I'm not anti-Western medicine, but I'm just saying Western medicine has its own two feet and its own paradigm. Chinese medicine has its own. Ayurvedic medicine has its own. And I see in Chinese medicine how it stands proudly in its own space, you know. Yeah. But Ayurveda didn't do that. And we started becoming a prescriptive model. We started needing to prove everything. Now there are professors and whole schools of thought in India which are saying that Ayurveda has to prove itself based on evidence-based model. It's like they're doubting their own selves. Then how can we even talk about soul and spirituality and inner boundlessness? But I'm one of those rare people.
I find my
supporters in, you know, people like you and other visionaries who are out of the box.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, I find it funny when people say that India is a young nation. India is not a young nation. India is a nation that's tens and thousands of years ago. So that's, I guess, that coming from a colonial mindset and wanting India to feel like, you know, we're young, we've got a new government and things. But that's not true, right? So we are sort of, as Indians, breaking down certain myths and misconceptions that were there from before. And also this need, like you mentioned, to prove that Ayurveda is what it is. When it's received so much recognition abroad, in America, people love Ayurveda. In Europe, people love Ayurveda. And they want to learn what it truly is. And so breaking it down, taking out the spirituality and trying to prove it is not the way to go. And like you've alluded to, so if they want to study Islam, you would study it in Saudi Arabia, right? So you'll have an Islamic center where there's research and studies being done. If you want to study about Taoism, you won't study it in the West. You would go to China and uncover its roots, right? And that would be the research center. In the same way, there should be more studies and more focus and more independent research, and more people should be encouraged to really understand and propagate what Ayurveda truly means. And it has to come from the epicenter, which is India. And I think that's where the key lies. And the good part of it, like, I don't get into politics and things like that, but I think one good thing that Modi has done is at least propagate yoga, right? And promote it around the world, International Yoga Day. And hopefully that continues so that India gets the recognition that it deserves for the benefit of the world, so that Ayurveda can spread more.
And I'm a huge fan of PM Modi, and I'm proud to say that I have been invited by his government to become an advisor to Ayurveda affairs, Ayurveda and yoga affairs to the government. And I've been twice back for meetings. And I'm so happy to share with our listeners that under PM Modi's vision, we now have an independent Ayurveda ministry. For all this time, we didn't even have a ministry of Ayurveda. It was all clubbed together with four other types of medicines. And Western medicine would take the, you know, bulk share. Now we have independent ministry, independent budget, and we have a vision. And they are taking input from people like me and all over the world to hear what they want to do. So I'm very excited.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. What is that thing that you're part of called again, just for my knowledge?
So this is part of, I am part of the, I'm an advisor to the Ministry of Ayush, and now the Ministry of Ayush. And then I met, you know, so they are doing things where they call it the BPD Advisory Committee and all that stuff.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
That's great to know. That's great to know. Thanks a lot for sharing. Now, you've also written that Ayurveda has a solution to existential crisis or existential suffering, right? So firstly, what is your definition of existential suffering, which I'm sure many people right now are going through because of the times that we are in right now? And then how does Ayurveda help?
Existential suffering in the Vedas and all our sciences have been described as an experience of bondage. We experience bondage because we are compelled to experience the polarities in existence. You know, joy will come with sorrow. And even if you get used to sorrow, then again, joy will come. So we don't seem to have any control in the way life fluctuates around us. And then there is decay, there is death. So there is aging. So there is suffering. And then there is this, it seems, because we believe in it, and it's clear that there's rebirth again and again, either in this realm known as Loka, or there are considered total 14 realms of living consciousness where souls are manifesting, completing out stories. These are like schools of the soul that we are going through. But it's relentless, because it's one thing that I have decided to join you on a podcast. So I have a little bit of free will. But have I really decided to join you on my podcast? I think I've said, yes, I will join you. But there were like 100 trillion factors that could have happened and I couldn't have joined you. Mm. You know, or if I wanted to avoid you, there were 100 trillion reasons and I couldn't have avoided you. Mm. You know, you would have come again and again into my life. So how much free will do I have is a question mark Vedas raise. I mean, yes, you want to find that, you are told there is something boundless and limitless and godly within us, but our experience of it is not. And that is called existential suffering, where we cannot avoid what we want to avoid, and we cannot hold on what we want to hold on. This is a number one helplessness. Like, we all are aging. We will lose our parents. We don't want to lose them, but we are helpless. Similarly, there are people we don't like, certain critics, certain bosses, certain friends who make us feel hurt. We can't seem to avoid them, you know? So these things happen. This is existential crisis, where our human will fails, human planning fails, human timing fails, human technology and science fails, even human spirituality at the most comes to a peaceful place with it, but does not understand it, cannot transcend it necessarily. The desire to then transcend it is known as mukti in yoga, moksha in Vedanta, nirvana in Buddhism. We have all these words that have come out of India, which are words for a unique suffering, which is when we go beyond existential suffering, beyond the wheel of birth and death, beyond the wheel of polarities, then that is called moksha. And moksha literally means the end of all sorrow and delusions. And interestingly, even though Ayurveda talks about the toenail fungus and infertility and sinusitis and asthma and depression and schizophrenia, and then it says, wait, and even if you're healthy, you're not really happy, are you? Because you're still stuck. Mm. And so to be in total control, you need, then it starts teaching us about yoga. And it says, oh, you need yoga, moksha, pravartaka. These are words from the scriptures of Ayurveda, which is now you must study karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, samadhi yoga, or what is known as Patanjali's yoga, to now reach where you can really like use your the chakras and use your consciousness to connect completely and then become a willful participator in the universe and not a unconscious, involuntary participant.
Okay, I get it. So then there is a prescribed route. It's a step-by-step process that you can take as an individual. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of these sciences is first, you need to address the obvious, right? You need to heal yourself first, physically, right? So take those steps initially, eat the right food, you know, adopt the right habits, lead the right lifestyle. And then, like you've alluded to, that's not enough, right? Okay, so you've healed yourself. And then next step is you realize yourself, self-realization, which is the path of yoga. And then after that, you discover the truth, which is, I guess, Vedanta, right? Which is the ultimate truth.
Yeah. Like with Ayurveda, use your physical body to health, then use yoga for mental health, and then use Vedanta for spiritual health. So physical suffering, psychological suffering, and then existential suffering. So it wants us to go one by one. And in the Upanishads, we come across two paths, known as the path of Prayas and the path of Shreyas. You might have heard of it. The path of Prayas leads you towards the world. And you and I, all we can sit there and think about is, you know, my podcast, my books, my writing, and, you know, my clothes and my car. I'm just giving examples. And that's what fills us up. And that's all we chase until we die. And it starts again because our needs have not ended. So we get another lifetime to write more books and buy more cars, etc. And then there's a path of Shreyas, which means the path where we start an inquiry. So we might be a podcaster, we might be an acharya, we might be a stockbroker, doesn't matter. But internally, we have this path of inquiry, spiritual inquiry, awakening consciousness. And interestingly, Ayurveda brings up these two paths and tells us that to walk this higher path of the path of Shreyas, even if you're a little bit sick, because when we start awakening our consciousness and expanding our awareness, some of our body starts ailing. It doesn't bother us, even if it's ailing. I don't know. I don't know if I've cured myself or I'm just done being sick. I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
It does help to know the ultimate truth that even though we might make attempts, not everything is in our control, right? And so even though we might attempt to heal, the healing process, a lot of it has to do whether we need that healing or no from a spiritual standpoint, but ultimately knowing that this is not who we are. What we are is eternal and timeless. And that perspective really helps. So Acharya, talk to us about what are gunas within Ayurveda? What are gunas and what are tattvas? Because I think that discussion on Ayurveda is incomplete without the understanding of these terms.
I know you've been enjoying talking about gunas and tattvas with your various guests.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you as such. You're quite informed in it. I'm talking to our listeners. But yeah, it's a great question, by the way, because it really gives us a language. I love how Ayurveda, yoga, Vedas, we have this technical language that really takes the world apart and we see it with a new, like less personalized understanding. So we can take the word guna. The guna literally means quality, but guna also means like a rope. And there are three ropes that bind us to the world through the mind. So these ropes or these qualitative ropes live in the mind. And there is a rope that makes it really, our mind really, it makes our mind very agitated because it just kind of keeps curling on its own too much. Like when we worry too much, or when we think too much, when we overanalyze. And this rope or this guna or this quality is known as rajas. And it comes from the root word ranja, which means to color. So it colors our whole experience. So if I tend to worry a lot, flowers may be blooming like it is in California where I live. You know, there are butterflies, birds everywhere. But I'm colored with morbidity because I tend to have this rope all the time moving. And then there is another rope known as tamas, which comes from the root word tam, which means dark or concealed. So when that takes over my mind, I might know an answer, but I don't get it. You know, I can't, I live a little bit like I'm unconscious. I may have knowledge. I have heard things from my seers or wise ancestors, but I can't employ it. Why? You and I could even have experiences from our own life that when I eat ice cream at 2 a.m. at night, next morning I'm going to sneeze. But I do it again, and I do it again. Why? Because I have tamas, like there are no lights on in my consciousness. So that is a tamas guna. And the third one is the God guna, or the God quality. We're not alone. We're having this crazy experience on this planet where half the time we are worrying about it and half the time we are being dumb and stupid, okay, and hitting ourselves on the head. But fortunately, there is an internal rescue guna or quality known as sattva. And that awakens even by sitting in nature. That awakens every morning if we were to watch the sunrise. That gets activated if we have a clean house or we clean our own house. We feel like you can think and problem solve. That gets awakened by eating certain Ayurvedic cooling recipes that I teach. You know, I can't teach it now. But so there's so many ways it can get activated even if I don't want to. Say we are a criminal in a prison and we start gardening, sattva starts awakening in the criminal. Or they start mantra chanting. We've heard about yoga and its benefit on prisoners, right? What's happening? They are people who've killed people, raped people. But a little bit of yoga starts awakening their sattva quality. So we understood the gunas. We depersonalize the mind. We don't have to call a person a sinner or a bad person. We can just say, uh-oh, they got clouded up with tamas. We don't have to call a person who's over-ambitious saying, oh, look at that, manipulative, terrible, wheeler, dealer. We can just say, uh-oh, they're rajas got manipulated. Let's chant om. Let's breathe. Let's be quiet. Let's be still. And then sattva will ignite. And that same person will become a saint tomorrow. So in the Vedas, the sinner today can be a saint tomorrow. And the saint today can fall down and become an oops, embarrassment, because their rajas tamas took over. So this is the gunas. And very much in short, that tattvas we have, the whole body has been described as tattvas, such as, okay, the three gunas, the five elements, the mahabhutas, the 10 sensory organs, five motor, five nervous. You know, so this way we calculate, and we have 23 tattvas or entities which are physical, which are material, called prakriti, and one, the 24th one, called pure consciousness. And the dance of both of these is life. And to me, the understanding of tattvas and gunas really helps us understand our situation and not just think that, oh, I'm Acharya Shunya and this is AJ and we belong to this country. And, you know, we would not get so regional and specific and stuck is my feeling. What do you think?
Great. I think that's a great principle and philosophy to live by also, right? Because quite often when things go wrong, we try to accuse a person and call them a particular identity. But identity is such a complex term, like who am I? That's what we're all trying to find out, right? We don't really know who we are. But instead of accusing that person's identity by telling them that you're stupid or you're dumb, or you know, you can say that, okay, this was a situation. These were your qualities. Maybe you did not act in the most appropriate sattva guna. Maybe you, and so there are certain things you can do, because ultimately we realize that there's beauty and potential in each and every person, but they use that certain qualities to either manifest close to godliness, or maybe they're colored and mired by some lower qualities which are leading to that result, right? So don't accuse the identity of the person, but look at what are the underlying qualities, because the beauty is, and you can change from rajas or tamas to sattva just by through practices or certain ways of thinking, right?
And I also want to add, because I love that, like godliness or other qualities. That's why we have the devas and asuras, you know, demonic and godly, you know, parts of ourselves. And more than anything else, I also wanted to add that for the benefit of our listeners, AJ, that we can use the gunas, especially if we have too much shame and guilt. Because we've all gone through periods of when tamas took over, we took actions, we should have known better. But we only knew better when sattva took over. And tamas and rajas can be compared to clouds that seem to cover the sun, which is sattva. But then through knowledge, you know, and I would say this knowledge gathering fest that our planet is going through now, you know, with the podcasts and the books and the whole consciousness movement, it's really helping us ourselves push away our clouds and have greater and greater discernment through sattva. So we should have more compassion towards ourselves when we were caught up in rajas and tamas, and also try and not act from that gutsy, you know, compelled space, if that's rajas, or a self-destructive space, if it's tamas. I think it helped me be kinder to me in my own spiritual journey, you know, from then to now.
Yeah, that's so true. Sometimes just because we've changed, we sort of are ashamed of our past life, right? Mm-hmm. Ashamed of the decisions that we've made at that point of time. Because life is what it is. There's no right or wrong decision. And the way I look at it is that I say that I make decisions based on the level of consciousness or the level of awareness that I bring to that situation. And sometimes we have to make decisions not with all the information at hand. We just take an intuitive decision, right? And from our limited perspective, that might seem like a wrong decision. But you know, like we're finding out there's no wrong decision per se. It's just how we change the narrative and the story of that perceived wrong decision and make it a right decision. So I'm sure that our listeners might be able to relate to this, right? Because life is just how it is. It's just the story that we bring to that particular situation that makes all the difference. And it's important to not be hurtful or negative to your past self, because some people say that the past and the future, it's all existing in the present, right? There's no past and future. Everything is existing in the present, in the now. So thanks a lot for bringing that into our awareness. Talk to us about what does Ayurveda say about the root cause of disease? Like, why do we have disease? What's happening there?
Wow, that's just take me a few minutes, because there are three root causes and they're kind of interconnected. And I try to, you know, keep it really simple for everybody to understand. And these are big mouthfuls of Sanskrit, so I'm not going to go there, I'm telling myself. Keep it in English. But the first one, the first main cause is, you know, we are the true self is pure soul consciousness, and the body is where it is, but it's our senses that seem to travel out and interface with the world, right? And the senses get exhausted. And then the senses may bring back distorted information, which destroys our peace of mind or good information, right? Like they may be listening to our podcast, or they may be listening to, you know, doomsday podcast. It depends, right? So the first biggest cause for dis-ease, physical, mental, spiritual, is the wrong use of senses. You know, believe it or not, they actually want us to curate the way we engage with the world. So it could be wrong use, excess use, like where we're browsing nonstop, you know, etc. Or even deficient use, where we're just sitting and not going out in nature, or not stimulating ourselves enough, or, you know, trying to be a celibate, even though we are not ready for it, and things like that. So the underuse, excess use, or distorted use, and I would say in one word, the unconscious use of senses is what we want to curate. And so in my Ayurveda classes, I talk about what would be the healthy ways to use our vision, what's the healthy way to use our, you know, sense of taste or touch, etc., or even hearing. Mm-hmm. Like say, if we hear mantras, or if we hear sounds, what's the effect that will have on the vibrations are said to change the alpha, beta, gamma waves of our brain. And, you know, they change even genetic resonance. I've heard now there are studies. So what are you putting in makes a difference. Then the number two factor is, how are you in time? And this is, you know, it took me a while to understand it, but it's really because I also study non-dual Vedanta, which is a lot to do with quantum physics, that I understand. Mm-hmm. And Upanishads talk about it, that time is not fixed. Time is based on how speeded up your mind is. So like when we were kids and nothing was happening on summer holidays, it felt like it would last forever. And now that we are busy adults, summer comes and goes, and you're like, hey, when did that year just pass us by? Because we're living fast in time. So when we start living fast in time, we actually become speeded up. And because all our minds are connected to a collective mind, because remember, we are one. The duality is only an appearance. We're really one. So then the collective mind gets speeded up. And then we're all disturbed. The seasons are disturbed. And we are behaving in a disturbed way in the seasons. It could be as simple as eating ice cream on a cold winter moist day, because it'll give you a cough and cold. But it could also be that we are not resting enough, not waking up on time, not taking the time to breathe and relax. So it's like lifestyle disturbances, okay? Mm-hmm. And speeded up behavior in time. That's what I would say.
Okay.
And the third one is ultimately known as Sanskrit word is prajna, pradaha. Prajna means, it means the intellect, but it also means a higher mind connected to the soul or the higher knowingness. And apradaha means a crime. So when we go against our own inner knowingness. So this is a beautiful spiritual teaching only to be found in Ayurveda spiritual teachings, where it says, you're a soul. Nobody needs to tell you what's good for you or bad for you. Mm-hmm. Deep down, you have a whisper inside you which says, wake up, brush your teeth, which says, wake up, take a walk, which says, don't eat this, eat that. Don't talk to that person, detach from that person, or go say sorry. We all have the inner guidance we need. We don't need gurus. We don't need pundits. We don't need shrinks. We don't need anybody. We just need our inner guru. We just don't listen. We don't listen. We violate it. We do it every day. We know better. And sometimes we are even told you have a teacher, a master, a tradition, and we still don't follow. So what happens is you're going against your inner wisdom. And now it says you're a self-destructive entity. Nobody can help you because you're not helping yourself. So these three things together become the cause for a roller coaster life that leads to ups and downs of the body, mind, and soul. And we take self-harming decisions in the arena of food, lifestyle, relationships, profession, and even spirituality. Sometimes we even leave our guru when we shouldn't be leaving them. And sometimes we join gurus just because of pack behavior. Everybody's joining them. We'll just become another new follower. We don't think because we're not listening to our inner wisdom. Isn't that fascinating, AJ?
Oh, yeah. It sure is. I mean, it seems like Ayurveda has an all-encapsulating view at life. And these are just principles that you need to live by, right? Firstly, like you mentioned, just the unconscious use of your sense. If you use it too much, if you use it too little, the senses affect your prana and your energy body. And it totally makes sense why you would fall into dis-ease if your senses are stressed out. The second thing, like you mentioned, is knowing the importance of time. Like, what are you doing? But not only what you're doing, but when you're doing it. In what season are you doing it? What time of the day are you doing it? What are you doing before you sleep, after you wake up? It all makes sense. If you eat too much before you go to sleep, you will naturally, slowly but surely, fall sick more often. And then the higher knowingness, which a lot of people talk these days, right? What is that inner voice? What is that intuition? Are you really listening to your gut feeling, which is not just for a student or a mother or a teacher, but also elite entrepreneurs use or should use their intuition more, right? To be able to get rid of the disease that is plaguing their organizations, right? And if they do it at the right time, then it makes a world of a difference. So Ayurveda is not just for health, but it's for the health of organizations, collective consciousness, and for the country as a whole.
I love it. I'm going to quote you.
Thank you. That would be wonderful. And so, you know, as we come to the end of this particular session, I want to bring a topic that's pretty timely. You know, there's a lot of worry and stress and apprehension, anxiety about coronavirus, right? Which is currently in Wuhan, China. And they say, well, the media says that it's quickly spreading, especially in Vancouver. We've got a lot of people wearing masks all the time, which I'm guessing is in a way increasing the apprehension and anxiety also, right? So does Ayurveda have a solution or at least something to think about when it comes to these epidemics like coronavirus?
I want to share a tip that we should all start using in this time of epidemics and pandemics, which Ayurveda, by the way, had predicted 2,000 years ago, that if we don't do something about our environment, you know, that's what's going to happen. And it also pointed to the fact that it is the lack of dharma or lack of ethics, lack of consciousness in human beings that is disturbing the dharma. So we are now dealing with the mess we had created. Okay. And we got that warning 2,000 years ago. So I want to, you know, talk about turmeric because we all know I'm sure you've done shows on it and happy to come back and talk to you about turmeric. But turmeric is a super immunity enhancing agent, so much so that it's now being used for the preparation of HIV medicines. And so much research is going on worldwide, not just in India. In fact, that is the number one Ayurvedic herb because of which Ayurveda shot into mainstream, you know, discussion, because it's mentioned and used as a medicine in Ayurveda for cancer, for all kinds of infections, tuberculosis, for skin conditions, and, you know, variety of ailments, okay, the hard to cure ones. And I want to share a tip of what we can all do if we are nervous and we want to do something. One is we should up our turmeric intake, not only fresh turmeric we can chop up as ginger and add to our soup, stews, and stir fries, but we should wake up every morning during this season of coronavirus and swallow a whopping half teaspoon of organic turmeric in the mouth. Then, because this coronavirus is inhaled, you can take a tablespoon of melted ghee, put into it one fourth teaspoon of turmeric powder, mix it up well. And if you feel you need additional help, you're going in an airport, you have to do things where you feel like you will be, vulnerable. At that time, you just put it in the nostrils, in the internal surface of both your nostrils when you leave the house. So the ghee, which is also an immunity enhancing agent, clarified butter plus turmeric are going to be the number one precaution for you. In fact, even if you tend to have pollens, because we are in spring now, and I'm about to teach a whole class on spring allergies, so it's all very active on my mind, you can do this and you will notice that you are reacting and sneezing less. Plus, if you inhale things, they will have to deal with the battling turmeric and ghee right there in your nostrils. In general, what I want to say to you, this is for specific tips, but a bigger tip, because I am a philosophy and a deeper teacher of Ayurveda, is don't worry so much. Ayurveda believes in what is the immunity of the host versus the pathogen. Work on, because not everybody gets it. Yesterday, I was listening on public radio about a show on how there are some people who have the virus, but they don't have the corona infection. And they are surprised why, like even after the due time of developing it, they didn't develop it. So they might be carriers, but they are not developing the condition. Why? Because their immunity may be stronger than the coronavirus. So what you do is you follow Ayurveda, follow yoga, think positive thoughts, build your immunity, and trust a higher power, and put your turmeric and ghee pack in your nose, and you're good to go.
Well, that's a great tip. I myself have been going more towards plant-based diets of late, doing a lot of meal prep. The week before I did chickpeas. Last week, like this week, I did the smaller other sort of beans, black beans. Mm-hmm. And this week, like today, I want to make saag, spinach. And so I'm super excited to do that. And of course, a lot of these meals involve turmeric. So definitely getting my turmeric in. Action Tribe, it's now time to take a pause and look at how you've been living your life so far. It's never too late, like we're learning today. And don't even have that doubt or that regret within, because you were meant to listen to this podcast and you were meant to listen to the words that I'm telling you right now. It's time for a change. And what better way to try out something new than to do it today? Nature has always been our friend, but we've been ignoring it for a while. Ayurveda gives us the keys to aligning with the cycles of nature for a more balanced and joyful life. Because to me, healing is not the goal, like we're learning together today, right? Healing is just one step in the way. The goal is to go beyond just healing and to experience the truth and get to know the oneness that we're all part of. But the key is to reconnect with nature. Because as David Frawley once wrote, as long as we're not living in harmony with nature and our constitution, we cannot expect ourselves to really be healed. And Ayurveda gives us the means to it. Action Tribe, are you finding it hard to de-stress and unwind in the midst of this crazy pandemic? Come join us for a soothing, relaxing breathwork session online on Zoom. Now, I do these sessions for our paid members twice a week, and I've received so many powerful testimonials from people who've received a lot of support, comfort, and healing from these sessions. And to show you just how powerful these yogic breathwork practices are, every month I do a breathwork intro workshop for people who'd like to give this a shot. In the past, people have paid anywhere between $10 to $20 for a drop-in, but for a short while, I've decided to make these sessions available for just 50 cents. a ticket. And these sessions are live, but you just pay 50 cents. So if you'd like to learn how to calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss using your breath from the comfort of your home, visit my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. That's my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. I'll see you soon.
Right. So with that being said, it is now time for the wisdom round, where we have four questions so that our listeners can take note and take action. And after that, we are going to record the bonus content for our Action Tribe Energy Circle members. To learn more about everything you're going to get if you decide to join us, visit my7chakras.com/join. That's my7chakras.com/join. All right. So, Acharya, what is the best piece of advice that you have received till date?
The best piece of advice that I have received was from my teacher, Baba Yodhyanath. And he said, believe in yourself, even if no one believes in you. It sounds really simple, but the more I think about it, I think it has changed my life. And I'm a pioneer in everything I do, in the way I teach, the way I heal, the way I am, you know, disseminating the knowledge. I'm following no pre-planned ways of how an acharya behaves. And, you know, and I'm having a blast. And I'm riding taller than my immunological problems, my other life problems. Believe in yourself. Yeah. Trust your gut deep feeling.
And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who's living or dead, who would it be?
Definitely my teacher, Baba. Yeah. Every moment with him, he was a man of few words. So every moment with him was useful for me. Probably I would like a half hour with my mother, who's no more. I lost her at age of 10. I didn't realize what mothers are to daughters. And now that I'm a mother of a son and a mother of I don't know how many students, like a mother type teacher, I feel like I would like to know my mother more as an older woman. Yeah.
And what is it one thing you do in the morning or in the evening before you sleep that has really improved the quality of your life?
I have many things, and I think I've shared them in a prior one, but one real quiet thing I do is that I remember I'm a soul and I have nothing to do with my body and my mind. I'm just pure consciousness. And just remembering that relieves me, detaches me from relations and tasks and to-do things of the body, mind, and it connects me to something very expansive, which is my true nature. And I think that's my most core and private practice. And it happens now that I've been doing it for so many years. It happens the moment I wake up. Yeah. Actually, it's happening all the time, even now. That's my basic thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if I talk to you or I'm cooking food, it's a constant contemplation that the body's cooking the food and I'm this vast sky that's flowing through the body, and it's been helping me a lot.
And if you could recommend one book for our listeners today, what would it be?
May I recommend my own book?
Sure.
I put my heart and soul in Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, and I've flown the teachings in it. I would say that is a great one. And if you really are into deep studies, then I would say try and find a teacher of Bhagavad Gita.
Wonderful. So is this book available on Audible as of yet?
Yes, it is available on Audible, and all kinds of formats are available. So check it out. Yeah.
Awesome. So Action Tribe, would you like to receive this book for free? Because audible.com is offering all our listeners, everyone, no one is missed, but everyone gets one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can get to check out this amazing service. And as you might agree, listening is the new way of reading. So the fact that you're listening to this podcast right now actually proves my point. So if you would like to get your own Audible download and start listening to a book, then go to my7chakras.com/freebook. That's my7chakras.com/freebook, and that'll be available to you. Acharya, thank you so much for joining us today. Once again, for the second time, before you go, tell us one thing that you are grateful for and how can we find you online?
I'm grateful that I have a mind that is enjoying wisdom. And may you also cultivate wisdom, all our listeners. You can find me on my website, acharyashunya.com, which I'm sure you'll mention, and which AJ will, you know, write with the correct spelling. And then I have all the typical social media, you know, ways of reaching me. Just type in my name, Acharya Shunya.
Wonderful. We'll add all the links up in the show notes. Action Tribe, if you are on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode. In other words, what you're seeing on your mobile device right now, and then tag me so that I can share your story and your moments with our community. My handle is @my7chakras. That's @my7chakras. Acharya, thank you so much for coming on our show, speaking to us about the power and the promise of Ayurveda in this new brand new decade, and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Wow. Thank you.
So Action Tribe, we are now proceeding to the hidden section of this episode, available as a bonus to the members of Action Tribe Energy Circle. Like I said before, to learn more, go to my7chakras.com/join. my7chakras.com/join. You will not regret it. And it'll be great to have you in there. But if not, I hope you have a great day ahead, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my7chakras.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.